we take a look at some of the big stories this week in national politics. President Trump's feud with Congresswoman Ilhan Omar was elevated this week after he sent out a controversial tweet. Washington is getting ready for the release of the Mueller report tomorrow, a redacted version. And President Trump will be visiting Green Bay on April 27th, the same night as the White House Correspondents' Dinner in D.C. Our question for you this week, when people running for president visit Wisconsin, what do you want to hear them say about things that would affect the state and the Midwest? Have you been to a rally for the president or a Democratic candidate? What do you listen for? Are you planning to go catch someone speaking? Do you simply watch for who takes the time to show up? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Daniel Neuhauser is a staff correspondent at the National Journal. Dan, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me back on.
Well, President Trump shared a video on Twitter this week of Representative Ilhan Omar of Minnesota. She was speaking at a recent event, and then that was edited together with images from the September 11th attacks. The video contained just a small bit of her speech. Give us some background on what has been controversial here.
Critics of Omar have accused her of downplaying the attacks in New York on 9/11 by saying almost flippantly is the assertion that some people did something. Her larger point in the context of what she was saying was that the Muslim community writ large suffered with regards to civil rights in the aftermath of 9/11. And her point was some people did something and the rest of us had to bear the brunt of it. But they've sort of isolated those comments and made it sound as if, as if she's saying, oh, it was just a little something. It's gotten quite ugly. There is certainly a large microscope on Omar. The things that she says are analyzed several different ways. To a degree that I would assert that a lot of other members don't get that kind of criticism. At the same time, she doesn't shy away from it. She has been critical of Israel and other sort of third rails of American politics. And so now, unfortunately, she said that there's been an uptick in death threats since the president's tweet and the controversial New York Post cover and other critical coverage of her. Both in media and from her colleagues in politics. Speaker Nancy Pelosi has asked for there to be a special security assessment to make sure that she's safe. So it's gotten quite drastic in the last week or so.
Now, President Trump was asked on Monday if he regretted the tweet, in part in light of the death threats you mentioned, Dan. He said he didn't. Here's a bit of what he had to say about Representative Omar.
It's unfortunate. She's got a way about her that's very, very bad, I think, for our country. I think she's extremely unpatriotic and extremely disrespectful to our country.
Is this something you expect to see more of, the president calling attention to this particular Democratic representative, or is this one of many Twitter targets and we may see this move on?
Not just the president, but the entire party. It's clear that they're going to make Ilhan Omar a point of controversy for political gain. Former Minnesota Governor Norm Coleman, with his political group, the American Action Network, is running ads in House battleground districts asking for that Democrat, the sort of endangered Democrat who represents that district, to disavow Ilhan Omar. So it's clear this is going to be a concerted strategy moving forward, asking Democrats to distance themselves from Omar, and I wouldn't be surprised to see it pop up even in small time House races in the course of this election.
Talking to Daniel Neuhauser from the National Journal about some of the big news in national politics. The Mueller report, Dan, people have been talking about this, wondering what was in it for a long time. We saw this 4-page summary from the new attorney general. Now we get a redacted version coming out tomorrow. First off, who is actually supposed to get copies of the report tomorrow?
Well, everybody. They're going to post it on the Justice Department website. And actually, just minutes ago, Attorney General William Barr and Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein announced that they are going to have a press conference at 9:30 a.m. Eastern tomorrow. So I expect that's our time. for when we'll be able to finally read this critical report.
Now, this thing is supposed to be hundreds of pages in its full form. I'm guessing there's going to be a lot of people across the political spectrum making judgments on that report early in the day tomorrow who probably haven't read the whole thing. Should we maybe be a little cautious for those first reports tomorrow, Dan?
Yes. I think all of my colleagues in media, I urge you to shun the quick bad take and read the thing before we start opining on it.
And one of the big questions that we can't answer till it's out is how much will be redacted from this report? What have we heard from the Attorney General about the kinds of things that will be closed off to the public, that will be redacted in the Mueller report?
Yeah, there's going to be sources and methods, which basically protects spycraft, that kind of stuff, and unindicted individuals who to protect their privacy and things like that. The hope is that there's not going to be any excessive redaction that would appear to be redacted only for the purpose of protecting the president. But I don't want to speculate too much because we haven't seen this thing yet. But certainly Democrats are wary of anything like that.
And I think one thing we can speculate about with some accuracy, both sides are going to try to make political hay out of whatever is in this report. Is that fair to say, Dan?
Absolutely. I mean, it's going to be probably similar to what happened after Barr put out that 4-page summary interpretation of the report after he got it. Republicans are already quite dug in on saying that no collusion did occur. Barr seemingly confirmed that, and Democrats want to see, how Mueller interpreted that, whether there in fact was, no grounds for collusion altogether, or if it was just, a case couldn't be made for it. And then, of course, the obstruction question is probably the bigger question still hanging out there. Mueller said Barr seemed to indicate that Mueller said there may be evidence on both sides of this. But Mueller left it up to Barr or to Congress to interpret whether or not there'd be enough to charge. My guess is that it's going to fall along political lines, whether or not people think that the president did in fact this or not.
We'll be taking some early looks at the report tomorrow on Central Time at 4:30, and then NPR News will have a special tomorrow at 7 on the details of the Mueller report. That's all here on the Ideas Network. President Trump coming to Green Bay on April 27th, Dan, holding a rally there. It's the same night as the White House Correspondents' Dinner. I think everybody expected him to skip that. Why do you think we're getting so much love, first of all, from the president here in Wisconsin and around the Midwest?
Well, you got to remember, he basically won the presidency with Great Lakes adjacent states. He won Wisconsin. He won Michigan for the first time since a Republican president won it since the 80s. He won Pennsylvania, which put him over the top on election night. And famously, his opponent, Hillary Clinton, most autopsies of her election loss figure that she did not do enough to court voters in the Midwest, maybe even took for granted their support. So now we see, for instance, the DNC is going to be held in Milwaukee. Several high-profile 2020 Democratic presidential hopefuls are talking about the Midwest, courting Midwestern voters. I think it's going to be critical in the middle of all the action.
We're talking to Dan Neuhauser from the National Journal, looking at some of the week's big political news. You can join in at 800-642-1234 on what we were just talking about with Wisconsin and the Midwest getting so much attention for the 2020 race. What do you want to hear from the president when he comes to Wisconsin, from Democratic candidates when they come here? What should they be saying to people who live here? What are the issues you want them to be focusing on? And have you gone to a political rally for President Trump, for one of the Democratic challengers? What did you see there? Did it change or confirm your opinion of a candidate? And do you think it's important that a candidate visits the state? Will that help sway your vote, say, in the Democratic primary? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about some of the week's top political news with Dan Neuhauser, staff correspondent for the National Journal, asking you now what you want to hear from presidential candidates when they come to Wisconsin. We've had them here already. We're going to have more. Presidents coming later this month. We'll see Democratic candidates, too. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Dave with us in Cross Plains. Dave, hi.
Hi there. Regarding the Democratic field, what I'd like to hear is some discussion of why so much money is going to military adventurism around the world, defense spending, the new proposed Space Force, which takes money out of the commons, meaning education, high-speed trains. There's lots of opportunity to help citizens here rather than putting weapons in space. The other piece from the Dems I'd like to hear about is some support for journalism regarding Julian Assange. Information should not be held back just because it's detrimental to foreign policy mistakes that have been made. Lastly, the Democratic field that appears to think that all Democrats are on board with open borders. Now, I'm a Democrat. I'd like to see that put to rest here so the Democrats don't get tagged with being open borders approach to immigration.
Dave, thanks a lot for the call. Gave us a lot to work with there. Let's take his last point first there, Dan, and talk about how Democrats are tackling the issue of immigration. As you heard there, not all Democrats want unrestricted access for immigrants. I don't know what candidates that are across the board there. What are you seeing from Democratic candidates on the immigration issue?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a point of contention with Trump. He's made immigration a central plank of his campaign, and he's quite content to do so because he thinks that it's a winning message. To be quite honest with you, Democrats nationally really try not to make that a big kitchen table issue, and I think your caller's comment is exactly why they seem to believe that Democrats care about healthcare, education, and other issues like that. That immigration, as important as it is not something that they want to stake their campaigns on. Now that said, it will come up, and there's going to be this natural tension with a field so large, any individual candidate can drive the entire field to the left. And we're seeing that with, a lower-tier candidate, Julian Castro, who, as of right now, doesn't even have enough support to get on the debate stage. But he's staked out a very far left position on immigration, which is essentially decriminalizing border crossing. And I am very interested to see whether a position like that catches fire on the Democratic left, and if other candidates are going to be asked to take that position. And if that's the case, does it alienate some voters like your caller?
Thanks for the call. We're going out to Jeremy in Racine. Jeremy, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, guys. I have two concerns here in the Midwest, or particularly in Wisconsin, that I'd like to hear them discuss. Would be infrastructure spending, transportation, electrical communications, internet, things like that. Without having a strong infrastructure, our economy is basically going to become stagnant after a time. It's going to be outdated. Secondly, the trade issues are a big problem all over the country. I want to see progress in China and with Canada. I know a lot of Wisconsin dairy farmers kind of overexpose themselves into the market by overproducing goods, but we need to get that stabilized.
All right, Jeremy, I'm going to jump in because we've got a lot of other callers who want to weigh in, but I want to get to Jeremy's point there on infrastructure, Dan, a real bread and butter kind of focus. Are we seeing any Democrats taking out that position?
Absolutely. That's one of the top Democratic policy planks. They want to invest in infrastructure. The question is, how do you do it? They want to do it through government spending and a sort of a stimulus. So if you remember the stimulus under President Obama, although they wouldn't want to use that terminology anymore because it's been politicized to the point of sort of negativity. But Republicans, on the other hand, feel like that's obviously not the way that they would approach it. So I expect that there's going to be some small bore immigration measures infrastructure measures working their way through Congress in the middle of this year. And then potentially at the end of the year, some larger scale package. Nancy Pelosi has already started talking to President Trump about something like that. And I will be interested to see how Democratic candidates, you know, approach that. If there can be a deal between national congressional Democrats and President Trump, do 2020 Democrats who are trying to run against Trump distance themselves from that? Many of them are in the Senate. Will they have to vote on that? Will they have to agree with the person that they're running against? Or am I being entirely too hopeful here? And an infrastructure package not even get halfway baked? That's a very real possibility, too.
Take another call now. Sean is with us in Stanley. Sean, hi.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I guess I didn't really know what I wanted to hear from any particular candidate, or, you know, Republican or Democrat. I'd just like to hear somebody say how they're going to actually do this stuff. I guess I'm just so tired of the rhetoric and the back and the forth and the, you know, even President Trump saying, I'm going to make America great again. Well, if he's going to do it, you know, do it. You know, it's like, tell me how you're going to do it and actually take action. You know, just to talk to be talking, to hear yourself talk and boost your TV ratings is getting very tiresome. And
Sean, thanks a lot for calling in. Dan, stand by. I want to get to another caller or two before we move on from this issue of what people want to hear from candidates. Ann is with us in Green Bay. Ann, hi. What do you want to hear candidates talking about?
Well, I want to hear climate change, because every other issue in this country, our economy, our health issues, our food sources, our water sources, our immigration issues, everything is going to revolve around climate issues and climate change and our climate crisis. That has got to be the number one issue.
And thanks a lot for that call. We'll have to do this again, maybe just have callers weigh in on what they want to hear from candidates. Thanks to everyone who called in. Dan Neuhauser with us from the National Journal. I want to move on to a couple more issues before we run out of time. A lot of focus, of course, on the Democratic primary campaign. There is a primary challenge now, officially, I guess, against President Trump. What's going on?
Yeah, a former Massachusetts governor, not the one you may be thinking that everybody had some hope would run against President Trump. It's not Mitt Romney. It's Bill Weld, the former vice presidential candidate on the Libertarian ticket last time around. He is coming out as a sort of a fiscally conservative but socially liberal Republican, and he stated his intention to challenge Trump in the primary. I can't imagine that he has too much of a chance, but he's staking his hopes on New Hampshire and some of the eastern seaboard states, and then moving into the Midwest, he thinks that he can give Trump a run for his money. More interestingly to me is the question of whether he will weaken Trump. If you look at history of one-term presidents in the last couple of decades, they have often had a primary challenger. Now, it's not necessarily that primary challenger is so strong that they weaken the president, but the fact that there is a weakness to exploit attracts the primary challenger. So I'm really interested to see if Bill Weld can expose some fissures, because certainly there are people within the Republican Party who do not approve of Trump, his rhetoric, his divisiveness. And that's exactly what Bill Weld in his first campaign ad exploited. It almost looked like a campaign ad that I saw from the Hillary Clinton campaign. A lot of the same controversial remarks were used in the ad. So he's going for a return to sort of a Republican norms and more of a high-minded candidacy, not the sort of the Trumpian Republican Party that we have before us today.
And finally, Dan, you wrote about a Democratic bill in the U.S. House called the Equality Act, aiming to extend civil rights protections to LGBT people around the country. How is support for that shaping up?
Well, the interesting thing that I noted in my article about it is there is exactly one House Democrat who did not co-sponsor the bill. And just as soon as I wrote that article, he attracted a primary challenge on the left. This is Dan Lipinski, a noted moderate or even conservative Democrat. He voted against Obamacare. He is anti-abortion, and he is pro-religious freedom, which is his reason for not supporting the Equality Act, because this bill does tackle the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which would essentially allow people to discriminate against the LGBTQ community using religion as a basis for doing so. by and large, Democrats do not agree with that. They want to turn the page on that. But Lipinski, it does consider it a priority. His primary challenger last time around got incredibly close. I think it was about one percentage point away from beating him, but ultimately did not prevail. I expect that to be one of the most competitive primary challenges. But it's also playing out in the backdrop of a policy from the National Democratic Campaign Organization to essentially blacklist any vendors who work with primary challengers against an incumbent Democrat. So it does open up some very interesting questions about whether the National Party is going to be on the wrong side of some of these issues, especially the LGBTQ Equality Act.
We'll leave it there for now. Dan, thanks as always for joining us today.
Thank you. Anytime.
That's Dan Neuhauser, staff correspondent for the National Journal. He was here to get us caught up on the week's news out of Washington. Still time for you to let us know what you think about Wisconsin and the Midwest being in the spotlight for the 2020 presidential election. What message should candidates be bringing to people here in the state? What do you want to hear them talking about, President Trump or the field of Democratic challengers, all of whom are coming to Wisconsin fairly often, it looks like? Let us know what you think. Email ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at Central Time WPR. And by the way, join us tomorrow evening at 7 for an NPR News special on the details of the Mueller report. Attorney General William Barr provided a glimpse, a four-page glimpse of Robert Mueller's report on Russia's role in the 2016 U.S. election. On Thursday, it looks like we'll get some new details when the 400-page redacted document is expected to be released. It's tomorrow at 7 here on Wisconsin Public Radio.